Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we make three bold predictions for this week's upcoming Democrat debate and how lower-tier candidates will play a decisive role in determining the Democrat candidate. We go way back into the time machine, back to the Watergate scandal of the early 70s that ultimately took down President Richard Nixon and why it bears zero resemblance to President Trump and our current impeachment sham. Finally, we look forward to week number two of the Pelosi and Schiff circus, laying out all the players, the testimonies, and why it's probably all a giant waste of America and our time. But we're going to cover it anyway, because that's what we do on The Charlie Kirk Show. So before we go any further, please make sure that you are subscribed to The Charlie Kirk Show. So go to your podcast provider, open up your podcast app on Apple Podcasts, type in Charlie Kirk Show. Do it right now. Charlie Kirk Show. Press subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating and leave us a review too if you can. This is really important. It helps our show more than you could ever possibly imagine. And press download on some other episodes in the past that you think might resonate with you. Some of the episodes I do on The Charlie Kirk Show, in fact, most of them have timeless content in them, meaning they're evergreen. We'll go through history, go through perspective, we go through economics. We try to cover the news of the day, but we try to tie it into timeless history, timeless perspective, analysis of the issues. So go right now to your podcast provider, type in The Charlie Kirk Show. Leave us a 5-star rating and give us a review if you can. So here we go. Buckle up. This is Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show, your home of conservative, libertarian, rational thinking. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Welcome to this edition of the Charlie Kirk Show. We got a great show planned for you as we gear up for what is going to be a very packed news week. I was just watching one of the shows and Nancy Pelosi was going up and she was saying, oh, this is much worse than what Richard Nixon ever did in reference to Donald Trump. And I happen to be kind of a history aficionado, I guess you could say, a history nerd, one could say. And I love diving back into American history and kind of comparing it to where we are today and trying to see how instructive it can be for future decisions. I'm so tired of hearing this comparison of Richard Nixon and Donald Trump. I think it's way overused, and it's used by people that have no understanding what actually happened in the 1970s with Richard Nixon. It's one of my favorite periods of time to study. It was one of the most formative of the entire 20th century was the 1970s. It was formative culturally, and it was definitely formative politically. There was so much changing at one time, but especially in Washington, D.C., and Richard Nixon made his fair share of mistakes, and it's so different than what's happening now. And you have people on television that are trying to evoke a sense of nostalgia with baby boomer voters to make it seem as if Donald Trump is just as corrupt and made just as many mistakes as Richard Nixon did. There are some similarities. Some of the similarities are that the press wanted to destroy Richard Nixon more than anything else. And that's definitely a similarity between Richard Nixon and President Donald Trump. But I wanted to start the show today with, and I told you so, I hate doing this. Mr. Producer is laughing as he wears his special watch. And you guys who listen to the Charlie Kirk Show know exactly what I mean when I talk about his special watch. But I hate doing the I told you so stuff. But there's sometimes it's just too good. It's sometimes we are a promises made, promises kept show at the Charlie Kirk Show. We just have to walk through when we call things correct and we call it as we see it. And one of those things that we predicted, which was before the last debate, mind you, we made a prediction when I made this prediction, Mr. Producer kind of cocked his head. He said, really? I don't know about that. And we had a long conversation afterwards. But the prediction we made was that Pete Buttigieg, I think I'm saying that right. Pete Buttigieg, the mayor from South Bend, Indiana, was going to surge in Iowa. This comes from me doing something unbelievably radical, actually going to Iowa and talking to people. I know. It's like something that a lot of people in the DC political class and in the polling punditry world don't actually do. I came off of an event in September where I went to Iowa and we had our culture war tour stop for Turning Point USA, tpusa.com. We had our Turning Point USA stop at University of Iowa and I actually talked to human beings about who they thought had the best infrastructure in Iowa. And actually, having done what most of the people in the D.C. political class have not done, I've actually campaigned in Iowa. I campaigned and caucused for Senator Ted Cruz in Iowa in 2016. I was in his inner circle, and Iowa isn't that far from Illinois, and I went there many times, and I understand the kind of infrastructure and the kind of energy, the kind of focus, and the kind of discipline that it takes to win Iowa. And so I saw in Pete Buttigieg great opportunity and great potential to actually win Iowa. So let's actually go back to the Charlie Kirk Show archives, and you guys can go way back in the time machine and download every single episode, something I highly recommend you do regardless. So go back and do that, but let's go back to the Charlie Kirk Show archives and find where I kind of did the Babe Ruth pointing to center field, saying that Pete Buttigieg was going to surge in Iowa. Now, mind you, when I made this prediction, Pete Buttigieg was in the single digits in Iowa. And right now, he's a lot more than single digits. I'll tell you where he is right now. Let's play tape. If I had to say, hey, this person has the highest likelihood of getting hot in Iowa, and no one is talking about this guy, but he's had a good amount of press appeal and hasn't had a big blow up, I would have to say that guy is Pete Buttigieg. He has a Midwestern appeal. He has raised a tremendous amount of money. He has a great Iowa operation, and I think he's going to have his Iowa moment. So when we did that segment, Pete Buttigieg, that was on October 15th, Pete Buttigieg was on the Real Clear Politics average right around 11.5%, and the latest poll has him at 25% in Iowa. And so he is now the front runner in Iowa. Now we're going to make another prediction here, November 18th, 2019. He's getting too hot too early. He's a great candidate to get hot late. He's a great late-breaking candidate. He is not someone who is built to sustain a lead in a primary. So if you understand the political fundamentals of how primary politics work, in order to sustain a lead, you need to be someone like Donald Trump, someone who is autonomous, someone who is able to command the news cycle, someone who they're making stories about, and they're actually asking other candidates about their positions on that candidate. That's what you know a frontrunner is like. Pete Buttigieg, in my own estimation, and I could be mistaken here, but I don't think I am, or else I wouldn't be saying it, I don't think he has the wherewithal, and I don't think he has the gravitas to continue this 25% threshold that he has hit. He doesn't have a 25-point lead, but he's at 25% in Iowa. I think this is going to normalize. In this Democrat field, the person who is the biggest kind of party crasher, the individual who just needs to get out of the way and things would actually go to some form of equilibrium if what you wanted was a Warren or a Biden presidency, is Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders has proven that he cannot rise and he cannot fall. He is perfect at treading water. Bernie Sanders has captured the 15% Bolshevik breadline Soviets, half kidding, of course, in the Democrat Party. I mean, it is remarkable how Bernie Sanders, despite having health complications, of which we're not trivializing, but it's a real thing to put into factor in when you're trying to choose the president of the United States, and someone who has some extreme and radical positions, is able to stay right around that kind of 12 to 15% number in the states like Iowa and New Hampshire. Elizabeth Warren, who we predicted was going to surge, and I still think has a good chance being the nominee, she is going through a real stalling phase right now. Elizabeth Warren is proving that she is much more vulnerable on a lot of positions than people thought. This debate coming up this week will be something to see. We are going to have exclusive insight and analysis done in real time, and we'll be posting that episode right after the debate. So when you wake up Thursday morning, we will have watched that Democrat debate so you would not have to. Here are my three big predictions about this week's Democrat debate. You're going to see more and more attacks of Pete Buttigieg being treated as the front runner and Joe Biden all of a sudden trying to make himself seem like a frontier candidate. That's number one. Number two, you're going to see Democrats struggle with the issue of impeachment. Impeachment is not that popular to the broader audience, but it is popular with the, let's say, vengeful Democrat base that have still not gotten over losing the 2016 election. And then number three, I think you are going to see a candidate that is not currently in the entire national conversation, like Tulsi Gabbard or Klobuchar, essentially throw some Hail Marys, start to pick some fights. Now, you might remember back in the 2016 race, Donald Trump was aided tremendously and was benefited by a Chris Christie, Marco Rubio fight. For those of you that might not remember, Donald Trump lost Iowa. He got second place in Iowa. Ted Cruz got first. Marco Rubio surged to number three. And in some ways, Marco Rubio was being treated as the dark horse frontrunner. The media wanted anybody except Donald Trump. even though they loved covering Donald Trump. Ted Cruz was proven to have the most durability long-term throughout the Republican primary. Despite Donald Trump, I should say, he had the most durability to be able to actually launch a campaign throughout the 2016 primary race. But Marco Rubio was actually poised to do very well in New Hampshire. And then there was a debate. I believe that debate was either Saturday or Sunday night before the Tuesday in New Hampshire. I remember exactly where I was. And Chris Christie, who had no chance of actually winning New Hampshire, went all New Jersey prosecutor on Marco Rubio. And this is when Marco Rubio, and I like Marco, Marco's a friend, but this is just a fair political science analysis. Marco Rubio repeated himself three times in almost a robotronic way that ended his campaign. And Donald Trump smiled all the way to winning New Hampshire, eventually winning South Carolina. And I'll never forget when he won South Carolina, Newt Gingrich went on Fox News and he said, "The entire Republican establishment better understand that Donald Trump is now going to be your nominee." I'll never forget that when Newt Gingrich was live on Sean Hannity's show. Now, this is instructive in one way, that lower tier candidates can play a really important role in disrupting the status quo or disrupting who's actually going to get hot when. So despite certain candidates not having a chance of actually getting the nomination, like Andrew Yang, or watch on this debate this week, this is my third prediction, they're going to try to either A, make a name for themselves, or B, do what they think is correct. And people like Cory Booker perfectly fit this mold. And you can start to see if they want to potentially audition for vice president or for secretary of state in the future, they might come to the aid of who they think the nominee is going to be. And you saw this in 2016 as well, after certain candidates dropped out. When Mike Huckabee dropped out, he went and immediately endorsed Donald Trump. When Ben Carson dropped out, he came and endorsed Donald Trump. Actually, let me rephrase that. We'll do some fact-checking. I think he and Cruz were in such a feud, he eventually endorsed Donald Trump because Carson had a bone to pick with Ted Cruz in the Iowa caucus and how some things were handled. Keep an eye on this. Pete Buttigieg is now his target number one in Iowa. And Joe Biden, another promises made, promises kept prediction on the Charlie Kirk Show, is we predicted that Joe Biden was going to flounder, and he, I think, is in third or fourth place in this latest Iowa poll. So now I want to get to the Richard Nixon analysis. They are nothing alike. I want to get into that and where the media is totally wrong. And I think I have some insight that will be very valuable for people to hear. But first, this fall, start a new monthly routine that'll upgrade your life and style with what? Box of Awesome from Bespoke Post. Bespoke Post sends guys only the best stuff every month. I love this thing. It's called Box of Awesome. When I get it sent to our Turning Point USA office. The stuff in there is so impressive. So whether you're looking to craft your own hard cider or toast perfectly aged fall cocktails, Box of Awesome has you covered. So basically, here's how it works. You take this quiz of stuff you like. So the hard cider and the perfectly aged fall cocktails, not really my thing, but that's okay. But there's great outdoor gear and cooking tools, and then they'll email you. And then for just $45, you get over $70 worth of stuff, totally optional. It's called boxofawesome.com. Boxofawesome.com. You get 20% off your first monthly box. It's free to sign up. You can cancel at any time. And it's basically for men that have different interests. And you might be saying, you know, I want to mix up my style. I want to get some different, you know, cooking tools or outdoor gear or barware, grooming goods, you name it. You fill it out. There's no harm in filling it out. And things will get sent to you and you'll absolutely love it. So here's what you do. You go to boxofawesome.com. Use the promo code Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E, for 20% off your first box. That's boxofawesome.com. Enter the code Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E. Get your promo code all figured out. You fill out the quiz. You'll get some amazing stuff. And it is called Box of Awesome, and it lives up to the name. Again, that's boxofawesome.com. Use that promo code Charlie. You won't regret it. So basically, every media pundit and Democrat out there is talking about how President Trump is really Richard Nixon, or Richard Nixon and Trump have all this in common. So look, let's walk through the facts of all this, because they are nothing alike. Well, again, I shouldn't say they're nothing alike. I guess they were both Republican presidents hated by the media. But I repeat myself, every Republican president is hated by the media. Many of you have probably seen the movie All the President's Men. It was a 1976 American political thriller about the Watergate scandal. And so, look, the Nixon presidency came unraveling for a lot of reasons. A lot of things that President Trump has not done and will never do and will never engage in. So I have to understand, let's just go through the facts of this. I'm going to add some color to it. And I hope this will give you the important intellectual and historical context that you could push back against your leftist friends, professors, teachers, relatives as you come to Thanksgiving, making the inaccurate comparison that President Donald Trump is somehow even closely aligned with President Richard Nixon. Now, I will say this. There are people listening to this podcast that are really big on Nixon apologism. We will not do that on this show. there are people at the Nixon Library, nice enough people, that will basically say Richard Nixon did nothing wrong. He was set up by the people within him, and he fell on the sword for the good of the Republican Party. I think there might be some very interesting conversation around that. We're not going to get into that. I'm just going to do the facts, and I will defend Nixon on some things, but he did do a lot wrong as well. Okay, so in 1973, when the Senate Special Committee, chaired by a Democrat, which was Sam Ervin, he was a North Carolina Democrat, he was overseeing hearings on Watergate. So let's just start on what Watergate was. Let's just give you some context. So there was a break-in at the Democrat National Committee headquarters. And this break-in, there were some people that did it, young people that were allegedly paid to do this break-in. And there, it prompted an entire investigation into it. And the White House was doing everything it possibly could to distance themselves from this break-in. And as articulated in the book, in the movie that a lot of you have seen, All the President's Men, which of course had Woodward and Bernstein profiled in it, they went relentlessly looking for facts and looking through sources. And of course, the famous source was a government individual within the government himself who went by an anonymous name, Deep Throat. That's right, Deep Throat, where they met privately in a parking garage, and it was very dramatized. And so essentially, the more they looked into the Watergate scandal and this break-in, the more they realized that the White House was actually really close to this. And so here's what ended up happening is that Howard Baker, you might remember that name, Howard Baker from Tennessee, ranking member of the committee, he deposed mid-level White House aide Alexander Butterfield and asked him if there were any tapes of President Nixon's discussions. He tried to not confirm it, but eventually Butterfield revealed that Nixon did in fact had a voice-activated system that taped every one of his discussions. And so here was what this most bizarre thing about this whole thing was. Here's what Nixon did wrong. Nixon, for his own posterity and for maybe writing his own book and the accuracy of his presidency, he kept tapes in the White House and in the Oval Office that recorded all of his conversations. And there's another great movie that I highly recommend all of you check out called Frost Nixon, which was an interview series that David Frost did. I think his first name was David Frost. We'll get that fact checked here on the Charlie Kirk Show, but that's what comes to mind. David Frost, he got the exclusive rights to interview Richard Nixon post-presidency after he resigned, and sat down with Richard Nixon. And one of the first questions he asked Richard Nixon, which is just an obvious kind of question that he was never answered, is why didn't you burn the tapes? Which, like, why would you destroy the tapes that were could have been incriminating against you? So then anyway, the committee then unanimously subpoenaed the tapes. This went all the way up to the Supreme Court, which eventually ordered Nixon to hand them over in the summer of 1974. The tapes proved that Nixon directed the FBI and CIA to cover up the break-in at the Watergate Hotel, which was right near the Democrat National Committee headquarters. 10 Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee who had previously voted against impeaching the president and the committee all announced they would now support impeachment. Even Barry Goldwater went to the White House and now in a very famous meeting, which is now famous, to tell President Nixon that he'd lost support of Senate Republicans. The following day, Nixon announced his resignation. His approval rating in the polls at this point was just over 20%, which had meant that half the country Republicans, probably more, wanted Nixon gone. By the way, Nixon won the 1972 election in an absolute landslide. Here's a little biography on Richard Nixon that people don't actually remember. Richard Nixon served as 8 years, two terms as vice president under Dwight D. Eisenhower. There are two different types of Republicans, but they made it work. And then Richard Nixon ran for the presidency in the now famous 1960 election against John Fitzgerald Kennedy, where Kennedy won by, some would say, stealing the election in Chicago in the middle of the night, well-documented voter fraud, that Richard Nixon then conceded that election. Richard Nixon waited his turn and then ran again in 1968, won pretty decisively and won even more decisively in 1972 with one of the most decisive landslide electoral victories in the middle where the left, I actually think we might be heading towards a 1972 election where the Democrats nominate a ridiculously radical candidate. So contrast 1974 and Nixon and 2019 Trump. So Nixon lost half of Republican Party support in 1974. Right now, Donald Trump's approval rating in the Republican Party is as unified as ever has been. One of the most popular Republican presidents within the Republican Party in history at 95% approval rating. Here are some huge differences. One, Nixon's tapes affirmed he broke the law. Trump's transcripts affirm he didn't. Two, Nixon actually spied on the opposing party. Trump was spied on by the opposing party, and Trump has an obligation to uncover corruption and foreign meddling. Huge difference. Number three, Nixon resigned due to overwhelming bipartisan support, where Donald Trump, the only bipartisan support in the House, was against beginning the impeachment inquiry. Four, Nixon had no Senate Republican support. Donald Trump has basic full Senate Republican support and unanimous House Republican support, not a single defection. In other words, he will not be removed from office. And you might remember Richard Nixon resigned from the presidency, and Richard Nixon really mishandled the later part of his presidency by just getting too cocky and too confident and emboldening really bad people within his White House to do far too much. President Trump was right to hold the Ukrainian president in check, to try to check out CrowdStrike, which was foreign meddling. The comparison is baseless. The comparison is just trying to pick out a formerly almost impeached, resigned president with someone who they want to be impeached. The evidence and the historical context in no way supports this at all. In fact, Donald Trump and his presidency is much closer to not Richard Nixon and not Bill Clinton, but I think his presidency, and one that is about the revitalization of America, is much closer to Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was hated by the Democrats. Ronald Reagan was hated by the media. Ronald Reagan was called the errant cowboy who might be having health problems. Mind you, Ronald Reagan went through so much negativity, and he was shot. He was shot and almost killed in the streets. Something that you think would bring the country together and actually have people respect him and not challenge his mental capacity? No. Ronald Reagan was shot in the streets, and still, he succeeded in his presidency by crumbling the Soviet Union, creating one of the best economies in American history, and shrinking the federal bureaucracy. And guess what? Donald Trump, just like Ronald Reagan, ran on those famous words, to make America great again. All right, I want to talk to you about an amazing partner we have. And as you know, we pick our partners very carefully at the Charlie Kirk Show. I had a really bad back injury back in January, and I'm still trying to recoup from it. And for those of you that know me know that I almost always walk around with tennis shoes and not dress shoes just because of my back injury. Dress shoes are so hard to wear around. But now I have these amazing, comfortable shoes that are for people that want to get stuff done. Okay. And again, I'm really picky with my shoes. I'm picky what I wear around because I'm always moving. I'm traveling like 350 days a year. But this company called Wolf and Shepherd, they approached us and we checked out their product. It's terrific. It was founded by former track athletes and an Adidas designer who quickly realized none of the amazing innovations being applied to athletic shoes were making their way to dress shoes. And so basically, these dress shoes are good enough for me. Let's put it that way. Even though I wear sneakers all the time, these dress shoes make the cut. By combining soft Italian leather and innovative support and cushioning, as well as a bunch of other upgrades, they've created dress shoes that you can literally wear all day, discomfort-free. Mind you, I went and I bought some of the best dress shoes out there in London, and I hated them all because I would get back pain and all this. These get the job done. They prioritize comfort and something incredibly important, your feet. Now listen up. Right now through December 3rd, Wolf and Shepherd is offering $101 off any purchase over $300 when you use that promo code Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E. This is by far their biggest sale and of the year, so you do not want to miss out. So right now, visit wolfandshepherd.com/Charlie and use the promo code Charlie. Again, Wolf and Shepherd, that's SHEPHERD.com/Charlie. Yes, I know you know how to spell Shepherd, but someone else listening may not. So remember, to $101 off any purchase over $300, you guys are going to love this product. You guys will be comfortable again. Again, make sure your feet are taken care of. Go to wolfandshepherd.com/Charlie. All right, we got a big week ahead of the Democrat impeachment circus, the sham and the scam led by the Schiff Show man himself, Adam Schiff. So here are the big players that they're going to call to testify. On Tuesday, we have our first panel. Again, I feel like this is some form of murder on the Orient Express with deep state bureaucrats playing telephone all to avenge a president that they don't think should have won an election who they don't like. So the first one we have is Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who is the top Ukraine specialist on the National Security Council. Vindman listened, this guy actually listened to the phone call that we have a transcript of, so I'd like to know what he knows that we don't know. But anyway, Vindman listened to the July 25th telephone conversation in the White House Situation Room, and he reported his concerns about the president's mentions of political investigations to a National Security Council attorney. He said the attorney decided to move the record of the call onto a highly classified system that few could access, a very standard procedure which Barack Obama employed countless times throughout his presidency. So here's what the Democrats' angle is going to be. I'm going to tell you their whole script right now. Vindman previously testified that the transcript of Trump's July 25th phone call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was missing certain details. Vindman said, quote, he would have edited the transcript to specifically show that Zelensky mentioned Burisma, the company that hired Hunter Biden, rather than just the company, according to sources. The original transcript reads, he or she will look into the situation, specifically to the company that you mentioned in this issue, end quote. Additionally, CNN reports, quote, Vindman testified that one example of his attempts to change the transcript was to include Trump telling Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky that there were tapes of Biden. They want to paint the narrative that the Trump administration is concealing facts and burying the transcript on the classified server. Here's why it doesn't matter. Even if we included Vindman's edit, it doesn't change the contents of the phone call. This is so important. So they're going to try to make it seem as if the stenographer, the person who actually makes the subtitling of the call, is not actually what was said, that it was heavily edited, and somewhere within the deep labyrinth of our government, there's incriminating evidence against our president. Anyone paying attention knows that Burisma is the, quote, company, and the tapes the president is likely referring to is the footage of Joe Biden bragging about firing the prosecutor who was investigating his son's company. I'm going to play this every single time on the Charlie Kirk Show till I stop doing the Charlie Kirk Show, and this is still a part of the news cycle. I will never not play this tape because Joe Biden needs to be held accountable for publicly bragging about firing the Ukrainian prosecutor around his son's corruption.
He's now went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to the press conference. Said, "Nah," I said, "I'm not going to, or we're not going to give you the $1 billion." They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, "I said, call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion." I said, "You're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here." And I think it was what, 6 hours. I looked. I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Well, son of a bitch, got fired, and they put in place someone who was solid.
That's right. Joe Biden at the Council of Foreign Relations post-vice presidency was bragging about firing a prosecutor who was looking into his son. So here's the other person who's testifying. Jennifer Williams, who began working for the State Department during the George W. Bush administration and serves as Pence special advisor for Europe and Russia. She also listened in on the July 25th phone call between Trump and Zelensky. Can I just say one thing? I was a little bit in the dark here. I had no idea so many people were listening on Trump's conversations. I mean, I'm not saying this is a good thing or a bad thing, but my goodness, this is eavesdropping. I mean, again, someone could say it's a good thing. I don't want to try to infer, but it's amazing how many people actually listen to these phone conversations. I'm sure a lot of people are thinking this that just are hearing about this. So Williams told House impeachment investigators that President Trump's efforts to pressure Ukraine to investigate his political opponents were, quote, unusual and inappropriate. Doesn't matter if she thinks that. Totally irrelevant, and quote, shed some light on possible other motivations for the president's order to freeze military aid to the U.S. ally. The likely Democrat angle is to show dissension in the ranks of the White House with a Pence aide appearing before Congress. Williams' lawyer provided the statement, quote, Jennifer is a longtime dedicated State Department employee. Well, that's reason enough to try to discredit her. I mean, what, we need another deep state person who's screwed up our foreign policy over the last 40 years? Williams' attorney Justin Schnur told NPR, quote, if required to appear, she will answer the committee's questions. We expect her testimony will largely reflect what is already in the public record, end quote. Here's why this doesn't matter. This is just another policy disagreement, which represents no impeachable offense, just like Bill Taylor's impeachment testimony last week. Do you want to know all about Bill Taylor? Please go to the previous episode of the Charlie Kirk Show Press download and listen it through. Here's the second panel on Tuesday. Boy, we're going to have an action-packed Tuesday, and we are going to bring you analysis, I promise, on the Charlie Kirk Show debunking this all, and also the Democrat debate later in the week. Kurt Volker, the former special envoy to Ukraine, who along with Sondland and Energy Secretary Rick Perry was part of the, quote, three amigos, end quote, tasked by the president to handle Ukraine policy. Volker has said in closed-door testimony that he participated in efforts to push the Zelensky administration to investigate corruption, but that, quote, he was not aware that Vice President Biden's name was mentioned or a request was made to investigate him until the transcript was released on September 25th, 2019. Here's what the Democrats' angle is going to be. If House investigators aren't able to uncover evidence that Trump or anyone close to him directed Volker to shut down the legitimate investigation of a former head of state as conducted by a sovereign foreign nation, that might constitute a new abuse of power to be included in the articles of impeachment that Democrats are looking to bring against Trump, said one of the sources. House Democrat impeachment investigators are also trying to determine if Trump abused his power by allegedly pressuring Zelensky to investigate Joe Biden and his son Hunter and claims of tampering in the 2016 elections during the July 25th phone call. So look, there's a lot that I'm talking about here, but just to kind of take a step back, they're going to continue to parade these deep state bureaucrats that all kind of have their own opinions, but no evidence that the president should be impeached. Here's who else is going to be testifying. Tim Morrison, who's the former NSC counsel, who also heard the July 25th phone call, but in closed door testimony told the committee conducting the impeachment inquiry that he didn't view the president's actions as illegal and appropriate. So that's going to kind of contradict some of these other testimonies. But here's the main crux of the Morrison testimony from the closed door hearings that we know of. Morrison testified that he included every edit asked for by Vindman and that he does not recall anyone, including Vindman, for the additions of Burisma and the Biden tapes. So why does this all matter? Why does this matter? To just boil it down, Vindman has been accused of having blatant anti-Trump positions and had to be reprimanded by his commander in the military for displaying political bias in favor of Obama. Morrison has also testified that he purposely kept Vindman out of the loop because he had questions about his judgment, which were also raised by other officials. So there's going to be a little bit of drama maybe happening in real time with some of these testimonies, which is so interesting to watch, as some of these public hearings, by the way, can go completely off the rails for the Democrats. So you have Morrison, who's going to be testifying essentially against Vindman. Morrison testified in closed door. Now he's going public, which is a big deal, that he purposely kept Vindman out of the loop because he had questions about his judgment, which were also raised by other officials. So, by the way, this could invalidate Vindman's testimony, just so we understand that it's more than likely that Vindman could be invalidated by another witness who is called. And I'm sure the Republicans, like Elise Stefanik, are going to call this out. So here's the big crux of the issue is, does anyone testifying at all, does Sondland, who's also, who is the once a top donor to the president's inaugural committee, who will be testifying Wednesday, boy, do you want to talk about a busy news day? It is Wednesday. My goodness, is it Wednesday. Because you got the Democrat, they've got all these testimonies going on. It's remarkable. You got Vindman, you got Morrison. We mentioned all these people, but none of them have any new evidence to show. They're all just kind of perspectives and overhearing and eavesdropping. The most important thing is this. Do any of them have anything that now contributes to new evidence to lead to the impeachment of the President of the United States? The answer is, of course, not. The Democrats, though, are doing this in melodramatic fashion. You know what this actually feels like? You guys ever see the last episode ever of Seinfeld where they bring all the different characters from all the different episodes and they just try to it's all, of course, a joke, no doubt, but they just try to make these are bad people because all of these people think they're bad people type thing. That's kind of what they're doing to Donald Trump. There's no evidence. It's all just talking about what they thought they overheard or they overheard or how things might be missing. And they're going to lose the American people very quickly on this. Let me tell you, I had to do a lot of research on this. Our team at the Charlie Kirk Show, they spent hours putting all this together. I mean, it's work understanding who Fiona Hill is, who Gordon Sondland is. How did he work with Rudy Giuliani? What did the Democrats angle? Who's Laura Cooper? Who's this guy? Who's that guy? I get it. I understand that your head might be spinning with all this. Here's the bottom line, and let me tell it to you straight, is that they do not have impeachable offenses against the President of the United States. If they did, it would have been like Richard Nixon. They would have said, here's what we have. We have the tapes. Hey, guess what? We have a transcript. But they would have said, we have the tapes. Let's impeach him. And then the president would have resigned, or the president did resign with Richard Nixon. They have no such thing here. They are trying to use impeachment as a political tool to remove a duly elected president of the United States. And by the way, most of these testimonies are going to be big nothing burgers. It's just someone who has disagreement with how President Trump has handled their foreign policy. And mind you, Ukraine got their aid. It would be one thing if Ukraine never got their aid, but Ukraine actually got their aid. Ukraine got their aid and then some, and also got the license and the permission to buy javelins, a very sophisticated and lethal form of armament to defend themselves against Russian aggression. There's also going to be Laura Cooper testifying, who's a deputy assistant secretary at the Defense Department, who in a closed-door testimony said that Ukrainians raised the administration's delay of aid in August after the July 25th phone call. The Democrats' angle is basically going to be they want her testimony to convey the abrupt nature of the president's decision to withhold aid. She wasn't on the Ukrainian call, so she can't speak to any of the pressure. She couldn't, if asked, point to an impeachable offense. Also, if David Hale, the undersecretary of state, okay, by the way, I just have to say, I think the Democrats are calling way too many people. If they really had their case, they should just call a singular person and focus on this person. I think this kind of trial by mob, this trial by deep state mob, that's what this is. This is a deep state mob. It's not going to work. The American people have a lot of contempt for these individuals anyway. These are the very same people that covered for the wrong decision to invade Iraq, the wrong decision to stay in Afghanistan, the wrong decision to continue to occupy every part around the world. I don't think the American people are going to resonate with some deep state bureaucrat that went to some Ivy League school that hates Donald Trump. I don't think that's going to be a winning measure. And it's going to be fascinating to see how the Democrats on Wednesday night in their debate handle all this impeachment nonsense. Here's what their tone's going to be. We're living through a crisis right now in our country where a president is doing illegal actions and he should be impeached. They're going to try and make it seem as if there's some crisis and they're the only one that can solve it. Make no mistake, this is a political charade. It's a disgrace, by the way. This entire thing is a disgrace. I am so proud of our president for what he's achieved for our country, and I am sickened to the core that the Democrats and the media are putting up with this circus. I mean, look, you're always going to have the fringe actors in the Democrat Party that want to impeach every Republican that ever exists. The fact that they're tolerating this, they're allowing this to happen, is a disgrace to our country. And the Democrats would much rather see Donald Trump be impeached than America succeed. They would much rather see Donald Trump be taken out than see America reach any level of prosperity and success. I think it's disgusting and it's despicable. All right, everybody, a huge week of sports ahead. I am joined here by our friends at betonline.ag. We have Dave Mason, who is the sports book and brand manager. Dave, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us what's coming up in sports this week. It looks like the college football playoff, we're finally getting a better idea of who's going to be in, who's going to be out, and give us some of the big NFL matchups coming up this week.
Yeah, well, big week coming up this week. All the bettors are loaded because they absolutely killed us this past weekend. So everybody's loading, has a lot of money in their accounts. NFL, awesome schedule coming up this week. Week 12 already, geez. All sorts of playoff implications on the line. Colts, Texans Thursday night. Some big ones on Sunday, including Seahawks plus two at Eagles. My Philadelphia Eagles, this looked horrible on Sunday. The Cowboys plus six at the Patriots. And Sunday night, the Packers plus three at the 49ers. And Monday night's a big one as well, as the Ravens minus 3.5 at the Los Angeles Rams. And, yeah, college football, huge. The college football playoff just kind of shaping up. You know, Tua here, so their odds dropped big time, not only because of, you know, the LSU defeat a couple of weeks ago, but now Tua's out. The odds to win the college football championship, Ohio State is currently the favorite at plus 200. They have a big game against Penn State at home on Saturday. Even though Penn State's ranked 9 and they're ranked number 2, Ohio State is giving 18.5 points in that one. So
wait, what? Ohio State's 18.5 point favorites?
Yeah.
I will take that bet instantaneously. I don't think there's any way that Ohio State wins by 18.5 points. If they win by 18.5 points against Penn State, They deserve to be crowned national champions right then and there. That's something else.
I was a little surprised myself it's that high, but you know, I'm kind of a Penn State guy by default just because of my lineage here in Pennsylvania. But I don't know. They haven't looked that great the last few weeks, and Ohio State's just rolling over everybody. But that is a lot of points. You're correct. 18.5 points is a ton for a game that means so much for both teams. So, yeah, Ohio State's a plus 200 favorite to win it all, then followed closely by Clemson and LSU, both plus 250.
Wow. So how are the Ducks of Oregon looking? What are the Oregon Ducks? We love the Oregon Ducks here. My dad, uncle, and aunt all went to University of Oregon. What are their odds to even make the playoff, let alone win it all?
Make the playoffs? Those odds are closed at the moment. They'll be open back up tomorrow. They'll probably be about plus 200, plus 260. To make the playoffs, we're thinking maybe a little bit higher. To win it all, they're currently 16-1. So $100 bet would lock in a $1,600 profit.
That's something. Well, it's a lot better than it was for the opening week when they lost to Auburn. I'll tell you that.
They've been on a roll ever since. They're hot. You know, you win that Pac-10 with only one loss, and a couple of these other teams ahead of them start losing games, and then they could get it right there in the 14 play. I just wish there was an 18 playoff, so we wouldn't even be having this conversation. You know, it'd be a no brainer, and let the top 8 teams go at it. But unfortunately, only 4 teams make it.
Yeah, well, hopefully that'll change. I like the current college football playoff a lot better than that BCS garbage that we had.
Absolutely, I agree 100%. People still whine and complain, but I just always tell those guys, just remember what it was like 5 years ago, and when it was just a guessing game, and all based on math models and whatnot. Four is better than BCS, but I think eight is ideal, and hopefully we get there eventually.
So right now, who are the odds-on favorites to win the Super Bowl? Again, we're talking to Dave from betonline.ag. Check out betonline.ag, our partner at the Charlie Kirk Show. So who are the big favorites to win the Super Bowl now?
Patriots still at the top. No surprise there. Plus 250. Baltimore Ravens right behind them, a plus 550. Then you followed by the Saints, plus 600, and the 49ers, plus 700.
Well, I like those odds, and my Bears are not looking too good, I'll tell you.
And they killed us this weekend, too. We needed them so much on Sunday night, and they did not get it done. We got absolutely murdered, so I'm whining and complaining a lot here, Dave. I'm sorry.
I don't know if the house always wins or not, but people can find out, because you can win at betonline.ag, I guess, right? So, but anyway, great to come on, Dave. Thank you. And I'm going to keep pulling for my Ducks. They got another big one against Arizona State this week, and then they got Oregon State. And I think they are going to be in the Pac-12 championship. And the only thing that could prevent Oregon from getting in is if Georgia runs the table and beats LSU in the SEC title game. That is what no one's talking about. That would almost ensure Georgia gets in and LSU gets in, Clemson, Ohio State. But don't sleep on Penn State. I think Penn State can make some noise, and definitely don't sleep on that Michigan team. That Michigan team, I think, is the best two-loss team in the country.
Beautiful.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Dave. I appreciate it. Great partner here at the Charlie Kirk Show. Till next time, thanks so much. Well, stay tuned, guys. We're going to have more episodes coming from the Charlie Kirk Show later this week. We got some big analysis coming from the debate. We have an AMA and Ask Me Anything. So if you guys want to get in on the AMA, go leave us your questions on the podcast feed on Apple Podcast. It's super important, if you haven't already, to type in the Charlie Kirk Show to Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. So go make sure you guys are subscribed right now. It's really important you do that. Or go to your podcast provider and leave a review and give us a 5-star rating. That helps us more than you could ever imagine. So go right now, type in the Charlie Kirk Show, press subscribe, give it those 5-star ratings, and leave us a question, a comment, or a concern that we can address on our AMA or Ask Me Anything. And I get a lot of questions. Charlie, how do I get involved with the nation's largest, fastest growing youth organization in the country? How do I get involved with the fight on college campuses? How do I start a chapter? How do I attend an event? I want to give you money, Charlie, at Turning Point USA. How do I do that? Very simple. Go to tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. Go to tpusa.com and support us in any way you can. If you're a student out there, go to our big event in Palm Beach. You got to drop everything. You got to go to this event. It's tpusa.com/SAS. That's tpusa.com/SAS. We got Ben Shapiro, Dan Crenshaw, Candace Owens, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Donald Trump Jr., Kimberly Guilfoyle. I will be there. Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, Senator Rand Paul. We got the biggest names you could possibly imagine at tpusa.com/SAS. That's tpusa.com/SAS. And if we got any adult listeners out there, please chip in whatever money you can. It's tax deductible. It's going to the end of the year. Right now, we are doing everything we can to grow Turning Point USA to more campuses and more schools, to lead the fight for freedom on campuses where it matters most. Turning Point USA is changing the game to educate students where it matters most. Again, that's tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. And one last piece of breaking news, everybody. The Department of Justice Inspector General Horowitz will testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee on December 11th on his FISA investigation. Buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. Christmas might come 2 weeks early on December 11th because we finally might get to the bottom of Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Nelly, and Bruce Orr, Samantha Powers, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Susan Rice, and the rest that illegally spied on Donald Trump as a candidate and used our own government power against candidates they disagreed with. So buckle up, everybody. We're going to have lots of coverage on that. Till next time, this is Charlie Kirk, host of the Charlie Kirk Show, your home of conservative, libertarian, rational thinking. Thanks for everything. I appreciate it. Stay free. Support Turning Point USA if you can. TPUSA.com. Till next time, see you soon.